Well, hello out there, and welcome to the Local Spotlight Show here at WJBM Studios in Jerseyville, Illinois, the voice of the Tri-Counties. I am Chris Lorton. I am your host. And my guests today, Mayor Mike Morrow from Grafton and Chaplain Warren Goal. And I'm going to let him, when we get going here, introduce. We're very fortunate to have Warren with us today. Mayor brought him in. He is Native American. He's involved in the Native American participation in the National Memorial of Military Ascent, which the mayor has created and going ahead with. Mayor, just brief everybody on
that. We've talked about, in your last interview, we went through all the memorial and what we're doing in that. But as part of all of this, our organization has grown. We're a 501c3. We're looking to honor all veterans with a memorial in Grafton that has the 12 life-size bronze statues climbing the cliffs, replicating Point Du Hoc. We've been getting people on board with us as partners and so forth, and one of the partners that we had over 2 years ago working with us is Warren Goal, and Warren Goal is our Native American practitioner for our group and for the board.
And I understand that the radio...
The radio man is being poured, we said before last time when I was here. The radio man is going to be delivered before May. So yeah, we're looking at probably before the first week of May. He'll be here, and you can come and see him.
And these statues are life-size.
Life-size statues in bronze, and they replicate the Rangers climbing. The radio man also is important to us and also Warren because it represents their code talkers that were a part of the Omaha Beach landings. They were not on Point Du Hoc itself, but they were part of the landings, and so we're replicating that with that radio man.
Just a brief description of the code talkers for people that might hear that term and they don't understand what
code talkers were. Native Americans who, for example, the Lakotas, who would one would be on in front on the lines observing where the shells would land. The other would be back at the guns, and when the guns fired, if they were 50 feet off or something, he'd call back in their native language and tell them to adjust the fire, and no one could break the codes.
Couldn't break that code.
Couldn't break it.
Well, Warren, I'm going to let you introduce yourself, so the floor is yours.
Well, thank you, and I'm very, very honored to be here present at this moment, and sometimes when I begin to speak, I'm a little shy, but don't be surprised, as the longer you ask me questions, the more lengthier my replies get. If you want to economize, just wave your hand, and I'll be quiet.
All right, I'm all ears.
Okay. My name is Warren Goal. I'm maternally descended from Comstock, Little Sandusky River, Ohio, a people who were relocated by Treaty of Sandusky, 1831, to Indian Territory west of the Mississippi River.
How did you and Mayor Mike get together?
We ran into each other physically.
That was up in Minnesota about 2 years ago, Warren.
November.
We were at for the MRCTI, Mississippi Rivers Tributary Group. We had a meeting, and I went up to the headwaters of the Mississippi as part of this mayor's organization, 103 mayors on the river. And we met, and it was up in the Native American community of Red Lake. And I remember that night, I was getting ready to go to dinner. I was hungry. I'm getting down the hall. Of course, I was a little late, and I was afraid they were going to start dinner without me. And there was this gentleman in the hallway ahead of me, and I noticed he had what he's wearing today, his Native American regalia. And I thought to myself, I don't know if I can get around him right away because I'm really hungry, and I got to get moving here, and he's going kind of slow. So as I started to transverse, go around him, a little voice said, slow down and say hi. You know, so I looked over at him, and I says, well, hey, how you doing? And Warren said, fine. And then what did you say?
Well, I was a total stranger up there about. I have a nephew. I won't repeat his name right now because he's a political figure.
That's right.
But he invited me to come up there to be part of the Mississippi River Cities and Towns Initiative signing of a 48-point agreement with the First Chippewa Nation and about 11 or 12 other Indian nations at the headwaters of the Mississippi River to join in with all the other functions that were, in other words, the spiritual guardians of the river. We had a responsibility to do the very best we could for the blood waters of Turtle Island, I know that sounds. But anyway, what happened was just classical. I saw this man come running up from behind me on my right side.
Because you can see.
And we're both late to eat and we're hungry. And I was kind of irritated. He kind of comes up and pulls into my lane, you know. I turn around and I look at him, and the first thing I saw was a bronze star.
Yeah?
Lapel.
On his lapel
pin. And I said, well, darn, I got one of those. And that's how it started.
They
couldn't shut us up.
We sat down to dinner that night. We must have chatted for about 2 to 3 hours.
Couldn't shut us up.
Told him about the project for the memorial, excited, and what he was doing and so forth. And we formed a bond. And that bond has lasted from that dinner to this day. And he's come on board. We call him the chaplain, but he's come on board as our Native American practitioner for this organization.
Chaplains is used interchangeably with Native American traditional practitioner.
There's actually very
few of us because of the standards, American Indian standards, to be given this position title. It's kind of rare, kind of new, and it's only because the U.S. government forces us to identify ourselves and how we work with our people in a spiritual sense of restoration and, you know, so forth and so on, physical and spiritual.
Would you be considered a medicine man?
In broad terms, yes. Yes. I carry medicine for my people. I didn't ask for that. That came over the years. As I mentioned, my story is on the internet under my name, G-O-H-L, Warren, and it explains how I became what I am today on a very slow process beginning in the 1980s after I had retired from the military. And I say I was searching for my people.
Yeah?
They found me.
They did?
Yes.
How many Native Americans are there in America today? What would you guess?
We don't know.
We don't know?
Because we don't classify by blood or census figures and so forth. That means nothing to us. We're children of creation, of our father, you know, and our grandmother of creation. And we simply don't, we hate the term enrollment because it was forced upon us so that we could eat, receive food commodities. We had to have a name. And this is where most Indian names come from. They were given to us by agents, Indian agents, or they asked, what would you prefer to be called? Well, names can be sacred. And at what stage of life do you want me to refer to in terms of names? It's very complicated, but very sacred. And it's just not casual, like, well, I'm a Smith or I'm a Jones. No, we're clan people. We're family people. I'm sorry if I'm talking too fast, but I get excited when talk about it, because it's sacred to us.
What's your role?
My role is to walk a pathway, not by my own volition, but as I'm called to walk. In other words, I don't set up a location and say, I'm here, come and see me.
Mm-hmm.
I walk and I find to do what I'm supposed to do. Perhaps I can explain it just a little bit clearer. Along my pathway, about 35 years ago or so, I was called by my people to be with them up in the Pacific Northwest. I didn't ask for it. I had no idea what I was doing. I just followed the pathway. And it led to having the Eagle Staff passed to me.
The Eagle Staff?
In the traditional way.
The Eagle?
The Eagle Staff. Yeah, well, Pahawakan is what they say in Lakota.
What is the Eagle Staff?
Eagle Staff is a symbol of our medicine power.
Okay.
One of the symbols. As the Eagle calls to the Creator to carry our prayers, and it brings all of our people inclusive into the circle.
When you say your people, are you including
all Native Indians?
As
it comes to be, you know, in whatever configuration.
I got a question for you. Native American Indians, do they want to be called Indians or Native Americans? What do they prefer?
Be very blunt, whatever the U.S. government wants to call us, but they can never have our words or language. They can call us what they want. At one time, and still is in many instances, you have to have specific enrollment. You have to, if you want to eat, if you want to have medicine, you know, classical allopathic medicine under the Indian Health Service, you have to have an enrollment. You have to, you know.
You are an American. You served in the military. Is it Vietnam? Is that where you
served 21 years, 2 years in Vietnam.
Is there still some resentment toward American government for the Native American Indians?
We are a people that have been here for thousands and tens of thousands of years. This is our land, our home, our sky, our water, our trees, our animal, you know, and the Native American, the U.S. government, the settlers that preceded it and became a country, they're here. Now, in tradition, and this is very, very, very sincere, the stranger that comes into our village to be with our people is accepted and cared for. No exceptions. They're not hung up and, you know, whatever, tortured. That's traditionally we took care of one another. Even in wartime, when we fight, we'll take care of the loser's family. This is part of our culture, tribal culture, which is totally was once part of Western civilization in the beginning.
When you say tribal culture, are you talking about all the tribes or just
the tribes.
All of them. That's the way.
The simple flow of life, the basic flow of life is in us. We haven't changed. I know this
You haven't changed.
Well, we adapt.
Right.
But when you call us in ceremony,
but, well, that's
we haven't changed.
That's what I mean. You still have the same thought process.
Absolutely.
And it's handed down from father. Right.
Even of those who espouse Christianity, most often it was accepted only to survive, not because you believe in a heaven and angels and all of that and the hell and so forth.
It was survival, yeah.
Pure survival, yeah.
That's very interesting. I want to go back to a question though.
Sure.
Where you were talking about how you felt, you didn't pick to be what you are today as far as a leader. You got picked by, what'd you say? How did that happen? Explain it to me. You were just walking a path that you felt that
I had no choice.
You had no choice.
No, I had to walk until my people found me.
That's what I mean. Yeah,
that's a very common experience with us.
Yeah,
we're scattered all over because once the relocations from the tribal areas took place, you know, the people had to survive. Even up until the 50s, Indian people were forced to go into the cities to work so that their life on reservations would just disappear. It didn't quite work that way. But they became, I call, closet Indians, where they had to adopt identities that were not so-called offensive to the population that they had come to live in. And they had to survive with jobs and have children and send to schools and so forth. So after a while, they just all of a sudden became like my mother. Until she was in her 60s, never would talk about having an Indian family.
I see.
And then it came out in torrents. But was Spanish, she was Italian, she was Jewish, she was anything but Indian. That was not to even be talked about.
I'll be darned.
She divorced my father, who I believe is full-blooded Potawatomi, and because she couldn't survive with him in Chicago. And the whole family was like that.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. But I had no choice. We moved 13 times by the time I ended up in St. Charles, Missouri, going to high school, Duchesne High School. You know, incredible nomadic life. Just to get away, people got too close, we moved.
Really?
Yeah.
And are you settled down in St. Charles today? Have you settled yet?
I joined the U.S. Army July 1st, 1959, and I've been washing dishes and got through high school that way. And I joined the Army because I was tired. I needed a rest. I left and didn't come back for over 62 years to this area.
Is that right?
Yeah.
And then if
I'm probably one of the last squirrel hunters in St. Charles. I remember one of the last wolf was killed in St. Peter's.
I'll be darned.
Yeah. That I literally collided and crashed into Mike's world is incredible. But it's real. This is how my life has always worked. If I'm looking for a tree, I never see it until I run into it.
I like that.
And that's our medicine. That's how
that's
we talked about
it.
If you want to see a tree turn around, it's right there. Oh. So that's why we got flat noses in the tree.
I kind of like that.
I have a direct connection with Normandy and a direct connection with Code Talkers, I believe.
How's that?
Three of my uncles, my only three uncles, were in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
One of them was a fighter pilot. P-51, spent about 2.5 years in England fighting the Germans' air power. He spent 14 hours in his aircraft over Normandy the day of the invasion, D-Day.
Wow.
He's well known in the history of World War II, Air Force, and so forth. His name is Mark Stapleton. Marcus, my mother's older brother. I didn't know much about Mark until I crashed from PTSD in the late 1980s. I'm 100% PTSD disabled and 60% disabled Agent Orange cardio, combat related.
Right.
And I was given an assignment by my therapist to locate a relative who had been in war and so forth, and I found my uncle Mark's phone number, and I called him. We talked for a long time. He eventually killed himself.
He did.
In his late 50s. Another one was wounded, came back totally changed, and committed suicide at age 46. Shot himself.
Who was that?
My uncle Dale.
Dale.
Yeah. And another one was just a quiet man who I really don't know what happened to him. My father was a high school graduate and was selected to become an apprentice radio electrician, technician with Western Electric in Chicago. That's where he was from. And he graduated from the program in his early 20s as a certified national standards radio technician and was brought into the government and spent time in New Hampshire on a secret project. And that's where a lot of the tech support for Code Talkers in Europe were located.
Cool.
I didn't know this at all because my parents divorced when I was 5. And I only saw him occasionally over the years. We didn't live anywhere near him. But he began to come frequently to see me after I retired from the military and was living in Washington State. And during one of his visits in the late 1980s, we're talking about, I'm sitting on the couch drinking booze, and something led to a conversation about special warfare or whatever, although I knew he had never been in the military forces itself. And he told me that he had spent a year in New Hampshire. And I looked at him and I said, was that a Code Talker project? And he told me, no, I don't know. He said, I've been sworn to secrecy. I can't tell you. I said, I said, hey, you're talking to a man who has been working in strategic interrogations, for years, me.
Yeah.
I said, I have a super high clearance. Come on. Tell me.
Tell me about
it. He said, I can't tell you, Warren. This is true. All Code Talker related functions and personnel were sworn to secrecy about their activities because of cyber crypto techniques and so forth and radio, whatever. That was listed, I think, about 20 years ago. But most of the Indians, especially like the Lakota people, say that's secrecy is for life. And I have very close friends who have Code Talker families. We know very much about it. And in my 20 years with the Intertribal Warrior Society of Washington, sponsored by the Muckleshoot Tribe, is a honor guard for the national cemeteries and so forth. I was a chaplain with them and had occasion at over 2,500 services I officiated over my time with them. We had participation with Navajo co-talkers who would come up on common invitations to speak to American Indian people and so forth. And I got to meet several of them. They had violated the code not to talk. They broke it. Even though they probably have been given some kind of tacit agreement with the U.S. government that they're now free to talk. To we Indians, once a secret, always a secret.
I see.
Yeah. If you didn't make the agreement, you weren't part of breaking the agreement. That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
So, so I got to know them. And unfortunately, they've developed a bad reputation among the American Indian community because they had broken the code. They had broken their secrecy. They had brought dishonor to the people, which I think is extremely unfortunate because they were brave people. They had also had almost all of the publicity in Hollywood and so forth regarding code talker activities in a war, when in fact code talkers were used extensively in World War I. And they were part of Pacific War talkers, code talkers, but they weren't part of the overall code talker world. Just in the northern Great Lake areas, there were 17 tribes that had code talkers, and almost nothing is known about them.
As far as the native tribes, could they understand the different languages of the code? Did Indians understand each other's language? I mean, how many languages would a typical...
I don't know that question. If you lived in proximity, you may have some rudimentary knowledge of another people. We were quite nomadic in some cases.
Mm-hmm.
We had a well-developed sign language, very well-developed. Which was used by the U.S. military in operations, having Indians before the radio do long-distance communications through smoke and hand language and so forth.
Yeah, smoke signals, right?
Yeah. You'd probably find that over in the old remains of Cahokia, where they used to use obsidian reflecting mirrors from hilltop to hilltop and send messages up and down the Mississippi and so forth.
Quite interesting. Well, I think we got anything else we want to cover?
Well, Chris, I just want to say that we are blessed to have Warren with us as the National Memorial practitioner, Native American Indian, and he is working together and prepare the area that we're going to set aside for the area for the Native Americans at the site. And he's also working to bring the knowledge of all the tribes to this, and he's our conduit. So we're very pleased and honored to have him do that. And on the 12th of May, we're going to be having at the site, we've got the National Commander of the American Legion and his staff, and we've got the Illinois State Commander of the American Legion and his staff coming out to visit the site. And prior to that, as I said earlier, the first statue, the Radio Man, is going to be on site, so people can come out to the visitor center and take a look at that and see it in person.
As a wrap up, real quick, I also am a chaplain with the American Legion at Post 17 in Guadalajara, Mexico, where I've resided the last 5 years.
Okay, I see.
And we are primarily a Mexican American. I'm not Mexican, of course, but I live there with my son, organization. And so I speak for American Indians of Mexican descent living in Mexico and so forth, and their long-term generations of supporting the U.S. military in war, as the American Indians do, for the primary reason of protecting their people, their history, their ancestors, keep the country, the land safe for the children to learn, to prosper, to carry on, and so forth. And I would also like to apologize to anyone who says, well, he's just talking this and that. I have to speak in generalities because there are no certainties in our history other than we are a people who have lived here, and we're not all of the same, you know, thought patterns and so forth. We're human beings, and in our traditional way is we ask Creator to help us, and our grandfather, grandmother, please help us. And we're here for one purpose. This is the one thing that I follow, and I find it most common, is that we are here to do what we can do because we're supposed to. We're not supposed to be rewarded for being good people. We are here to work in common heart and common mind to do the best good in our ability, within our abilities, to care for all of creation, both with and for creation. And it's just as simple as that.
It's a beautiful thing.
There are no big Bibles, there are no hills, there are no angels, there are no. We're here to take care of the best we can as we exist, and we thank our Creator for guiding us, our Creator Father, Creator Grandmother.
So the National Memorial Military Ascent, please donate. We're halfway to our goal of $6 million. We've got $3 million, and we need the money. So if you can go ahead and donate, go online at graftonmemorial.org. Thank you very much, Chris, for having us today.
Thanks for coming in. It's been very interesting. Thanks again.
Thank you very much for the honor to be able to say words, and hoping that I've done a little bit to do the right thing.
Yeah.
To help.
Yes, very informative. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Anybody wants to check my record out, pretty well covered on on Google.
Google Warren Goh, G-O-H-L.
Please.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chris.
Much.